Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome to Eerie House Radio. I am Dale K from Spook Show, and joining me today is
Dave Binkley from The Weirdest Really Bad Movie.
Yeah, and it's the kickoff, if
is
you
John
will.
Newman joining us too? Is John Newman joining us too from One Step Beyond?
That's right. I thought this would be appropriate, a different intro for old
Very
time
much.
Radio.
Oh, I've always since junior high school, a big fan of the old radio dramas and comedies and such. And it was just, I think I said before, two things that caught me in junior high school. And went to the library and got out some Fibber McGee and Molly episodes and some Inner Sanctum Mysteries out. And it was a time then it was so hard to find the old radio programs.
Yeah. Well, hey, I've been wanting to do a show like this for a long, long time, and I have you to thank to kind of kickstart me and get me going. I've been talking about this really for years, is putting some of these old-time radio shows on and sharing them with the same love that you have for them and hope that our listeners can enjoy them as well.
Well, and that's the great thing about the forum you have here, the format in the forum, is that you get to hear something that's specifically made for listening, for the theater of the mind, as radio likes to call itself.
Hey, maybe in my case it's the theater of the mindless, but no, we've got a great episode you suggested, one that you felt was particularly creepy, and I concur.
Yeah, this is from the Lights Out series, Arch Obler, mostly notable for, created by Willis Cooper, and we'll get a chance to talk to him a little bit about those guys later. But it was just, that was probably one of the premier and probably the second or third earliest of all horror shows on the radio. And like the other two, The Hermit's Cave and The Witch's Tale, I think those were all late night, and the Lights Out itself wasn't on till midnight.
And can you imagine, you know, like today we have the internet, we have cable, we have satellite, we have all these different ways to be entertained, and radio seems to be going by the wayside. Even for music, it's going by the wayside. Other than drive time, I think people still listen to the radio in their cars. I know I sure do. Whether it's satellite or regular broadcast radio. But back in the 1930s, the 1940s, there wasn't a television in every house. A television had been invented, but there wasn't one in every house yet. And people gathered around the radio.
And it was delayed because of World War II, though. They didn't have the money to put things into television. So really that was why radio had an extra really 10 years, and it was really its golden age of storytelling. And even though, you know, in the 30s, yeah, everything was still experimental. And you look at the movies Trapped by Television or Murder by Television, both of those movies, in the mid-1930s, television was still experimental back then.
Yes.
Everybody was trying to figure out different, better ways to do it. And that's kind of what both of those movies were about, the big race to television.
And
radio was there either entertaining, either in a sing-along or in a mystery story, or like what we have here, some tremendous horror stories.
Yeah, and you shared something with me in the studio. We'll have to talk about later on as well, about the type of storytelling that you get in these types of shows that really influenced, I think, other types of storytelling, whether it be television or movies, and in particular horror hosting. So I would say, without further ado, let's listen to part one. What do you think? You ready, Dave?
I think so, but everybody must get ready to turn their lights out.
Yep. Get in the mood if you're listening, wherever you are. Turn out your lights, not your headlights if you're driving.
That's right, man. Leave those on.
Leave those on. And get in the mood for Lights Out.
Ionized Yeast presents Lights Out, everybody. It is later than you think. This is Arch Obler bringing you another in our series of stories of the unusual. And once again, we caution you. These Lights Out stories are definitely not for the timid soul. So we tell you calmly and very sincerely, if you frighten easily, turn off your radio now. But if you're fascinated by the mysterious, the fantastic, the unearthly, then anticipate chills in our story of Poltergeist. But first, Bob Lamont has a word for you. If you remember the name, Ionized Yeast Tablet.
Now let's go to town. St. Louis woman with her diamond ring, kicking that man around.
No, stop that, Kay.
What's the matter? Am I scaring the horse?
Oh, it seems like a sacrilege singing a song like that out here. This beautiful, clean snow and blue sky.
Well, what's wrong with a hot song to keep us warm? If you think the St. Louis blues is going to dirty up the snow, you ought to hear Frankie and Johnny the way I sing it.
Oh, stop it, Kay. You're not funny at all. Why can't you enjoy the fresh air without that cabaret sort of thing?
Oh, just an old-fashioned gal, eh, Florence? How about you, Edna? Don't you like my songs either? You haven't said anything for the last 5 minutes.
Well, I haven't been listening to you, to tell the truth. I love to watch the snow sort of flow along under the sleigh.
When you say that, gal, smile. Gosh, did you ever see more snow in your life?
The man at the hotel said it had been snowing on and off up here for 2 weeks.
I think coming out here to the country's the best thing we three have done since we started rooming together. Hiking in the snow's terribly healthy.
Yeah, that's what I'm afraid of. The healthier I get, the worse I feel.
Crazy idiot.
She does say the funniest things, doesn't she? I always say that Kay ought to...
Ooh.
Hallelujah, we're here.
Is this as far as we go, driver?
That's right, miss. Can't go no further down this road account of the drift.
Oh, my goodness. The drifts are too deep for a horse. How can we walk through them?
I second the motion.
Well, you young ladies don't have to worry none so long as you keep going down the valley over there. Snow ain't piled up that way all the way to Ma Jenkins.
Oh, well, that's marvelous. Come on, girls. Let's get started.
So long. Take care of yourselves, girls.
Come on, Ed.
Goodbye,
Ed.
Come on, girl. Listen to the snow talking at us. It's very dry snow.
Our feet rub particles of it together and the friction makes a sound.
It's kind of scary, isn't it?
Why?
Well, I don't know. It's just as if the snow was sort of trying to talk to us. I mean, as if it was angry at our trespassing.
Hey, don't tell me we're trespassing. I don't want any country squire taking any pot shots at my constitutional amendment with rock salt. No, thank you.
Oh, don't talk nonsense, Kay. We're not trespassing. Why, this path through the valley here over to Mrs. Jenkins' house is the favorite hike of everyone who comes up this way during the winter.
What's Mrs. Jenkins got anyway that makes people walk their feet off?
Wait till you taste her cooking.
Eat. Oh, boy, let's go.
It's awfully quiet out here, isn't it?
Oh, that's the glory of it. I've had the roar of the subway in my ears so long.
Okay, don't walk so fast.
Come on, look what I found.
Oh, come on, Edna.
Oh, please. Let me take your arm. I'm getting out of breath.
Well, take it easy. There's no hurry. Well, what is it, Kay?
Look, through the circle of trees here. Look what I discovered.
Well, isn't that interesting? It's a sort of a natural amphitheater.
Sure. Say, who is this guy Daniel Boone?
What's an amphitheater?
Well, that means an oval surfing place with rising tiers of seats. It's, you know, like that place we went to for the horse show.
Oh.
Back in the times of the Greeks, they had outdoor theaters.
Listen
and,
to the professor.
They made use of places just like this, where the ground sloped up and made a sort of a natural arena or stage below.
Theater. That's an idea. Sit down, gals, and I'll give you a special performance of the Kay Follies.
It's awful snowy here, isn't it?
I'll trample it down with my spring dance. Welcome, sweet thing.
She's really grateful, isn't she?
I'll bet if she went on the stage...
Ow!
Kay!
She fell.
Kay!
Oh,
Kay, did you hurt yourself?
Oh, did I land on my dignity. Here, give me a hand.
Here, I'll help you. There you are.
Oh, did I take a flop?
Did you hurt yourself badly?
I'll live. What in the world did I trip over? Oh, no wonder. Look at that rock under the snow. No wonder I did a nosedive.
Oh, my goodness. There are rocks like that all over.
Oh.
A person could break their neck if they...
Girls, what's the matter?
What is it?
Kay, the rock you tripped over. It's not a rock.
What are you talking about? Of course it's a rock.
Well, yes, but it's something more than that. It's a tombstone.
Oh. Tombstone? Oh, no, it can't be.
Look for yourself. It says, here lies buried the remains of one who restless in life...
Stop! Don't read any more. Stop!
And all these other stones laying flat on the ground. They're tombstones, too?
Yes.
Whew, what a place to fix a dance.
What's the matter, Edna?
What did you scream for?
Kay, you danced on the grave.
What?
You danced on the grave. I saw you. I saw you do it. You danced on the grave. Okay.
Edna, stop it. Stop it.
Oh, what's come into her? Edna, stop acting
like
that.
Edna, stop, for heaven's sake. Control yourself.
Okay. Kay, I'm so sorry for you. You danced on a grave.
For heaven's sake, stop talking like that. Sure, I danced on a grave.
Well, yes, of course you did. It was perfectly accidental.
And what if it wasn't? What of?
The poltergeist.
The what?
Edna Hansen, what are you talking about? What's that word you just used?
Poltergeist. Okay, what have you done?
You superstitious little fool. If you don't stop talking that way, I'm going to slap your face. What's the matter with you? I didn't do anything.
You walked on the grave. You danced on the grave.
So Edna, what? Be sensible. We all walked on graves, but it was purely accidental.
Yeah.
We had no intention of desecrating them.
It doesn't matter, I tell you. It doesn't matter. The poltergeist. He'll come. I know he will.
Oh, what's the use? She's crazy.
Edna, what are you talking about? What's the poltergeist? What are you so frightened about?
My father, he told me, if you walk on a grave, if you dance on a grave, the poltergeist.
Poltergeist what? What is a poltergeist?
An evil spirit. It comes out of the grave. It kills. It destroys. It'll kill us. It'll kill us all.
Stop it.
Throw things out.
Oh, please. Lay off.
Edna. But it won't get me. I'll run
Edna,
away.
Come back here.
Away.
She's gone insane. I'll get her. Edna.
Can't catch her.
Edna. Edna, don't run away. Nothing will hurt you. Nothing. Oh, Edna, look out. Kay, what happened? That stone. It hit Edna.
Edna. Edna, open your eyes.
Blood. Blood all over her face. Kay, who threw that stone? Who threw it?
I don't know. It came from the graveyard.
Ladies and gentlemen, a deep breath. We all need one before we go on with the story of Kay, Florence, and Edna. The story of Poltergeist on tonight's Lights Out.
Wow, what a creepy setup for a creepy story.
Especially after taking those ionized yeast tablets.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, they had to pay for the show, so.
Oh, yeah, but I'm not even sure what was all in those. I know that it was interesting. I knew a guy, he lived in Wisconsin when he was growing up. He was an engineer since passed, but he said they used to, before they had iodized salt, they used to have to take iodine tablets every so often at school to get the iodine in there that you need. So that's probably what this iodized yeast was also part of, that supplement that isn't needed there because of the iodized salt now we have.
Yeah, I remember that was a big deal with the Morton salt. Now it's iodized.
Yeah, when it rains, it pours. Boy, there are things... rocks pouring out of the graveyard there in this episode of Lights Out, everybody. So
what a mood it sets, too. It's so cold up here in Ohio, at least. I don't know where you are, where you're listening. But it's rather chilly. It's zero and below with wind chills here, and this story takes place in a very cold
place. I think it's
a
little colder right now while the story's taking place as well.
Yeah, yeah. A chilling setup, and it's great. These old shows, they had the hosts, not as colorful as ourselves, perhaps, but colorful in a much more creepy and sinister way. I think Lights Out had a great host, the Whistler, and,
well,
and other great.
That. Lights Out had Arch Obler, who was the main writer for this. And again, very much in a lot of ways similar to Rod Serling and his Twilight Zone, where he wanted Burgess Meredith actually to host the Twilight Zone, and Burgess said, "Well, I won't, but I'll be in an episode every year for you." But he didn't want to be the host of it and be tied to that kind of a schedule.
Yeah, so and years later, of course, he got to do the intro for the movie.
Right, when they redid the movie, which I thought was interesting. But, you know, yeah, this came around in 1933, was the start of Lights Out. Willis Cooper, who was a very prolific writer for NBC in Chicago, I think he stayed with it through until about 1937 when he went to Hollywood to work on other projects. And that's when Arch Obler stepped in, a very young, again, another also very prolific writer. Saying Rod Serling here, actually Rod Serling thought that most of radio was complete waste outside of Norman Corwin and Arch Obler. So even Rod Serling thought a great deal of Arch Obler and his talents.
Yeah, and thank goodness for him. It seems some of the best story writers were very prolific. Even in the pulp magazines, Robert E. Howard, Edgar Rice Burroughs, and others who... You know, Edgar Rice Burroughs went on to write novels as well, but poured out this material to tell these wonderful adventure and horror stories that we've grown to love.
Right. Actually, when it first came out, it was really supposed to be a serialized mystery type thing, and it didn't take long before it turned into an episodic type show. But it was supposed to be a continuing type. Story.
Rather than an anthology?
Other than the anthology. That's not how it was originally planned. I'm glad it turned into that, because we probably wouldn't be talking about it today if it had remained in that format.
Yep. And we have a caller joining us here on the very first old-time radio show here on Erie House. Hi, caller. Welcome to Erie House Radio.
Hello. I think Mr. Binkley will know me.
Well, that's Baltimore Sam.
Well, actually, it's now King Charles the First.
King Charles.
I'm sorry. I just bought a new home out here, and I have dubbed my kingdom. I have coined my kingdom. I have dubbed myself Sir Charles, but that's kind of immaterial. But Dave and I have known each other for a long time. As a matter of fact, we're
Sure, Charles is a big fan and occasional contributor to the Weirdest Really Bad Movie, but he's a guy that also has a big love for old radio programs.
I do, and it didn't really start until I was about 40 years old, and I found a website that had virtually all of the, at that time, there were known Jack Benny episodes, about 600 of them. And
wow.
I just found these so funny that at work, where we had very fast internet internet connection, that I was able to download. I downloaded every single one of them. and just as an aside, got in a little bit of trouble with the people who were monitoring the network. Fortunately, he was a good friend of mine, and he kind of asked me, said, you know what, do you think, you know, during the day perhaps you could, you know, maybe not download so many of these shows? Or you're affecting our bandwidth. So I said, yeah, oh, sure, geez. No problem. I didn't realize. So I would.
Now, there's a fan. There's a radio fan for you.
Yeah.
Do you have any great memories of any of the Lights Out stories, Sam?
On TV, yes, not radio. That was kind of before my time. But I remember all of the, Lights Out, Twilight Zone, The Outer Limits. Every single one of those TV shows I watched, just religiously, every single week.
Unlike you, Sam, I did not discover radio until much later in life. And it's been such a treat. Not only the horror, sci-fi, and fantasy stories that I like to focus on here, but also the radio, the variety shows, the dramas, the history shows, even the sports broadcasts of the day. It fascinates me.
Can you tell me what your earliest, influences in radio were? In other words, maybe the first shows where you said, oh, my goodness, I really like this, and then, expanded from there. What was some of the first ones that you really kind of latched on to?
Like the old-time radio?
Yeah.
Okay. I would say my very, very first exposure, it didn't instill a great fandom at that time yet, was in high school back in the late 70s, listening to Mercury Theater, War of the Worlds.
Oh, yeah.
But I didn't really become a fan until I bought a car that had, satellite radio on it, and they had an old-time radio show there. And really, because I drive a great deal of time to get to work, over an hour sometimes, and this time of year sometimes 2 hours, I had the benefit of satellite radio in the car, and I got to hear the Superman stories, the Lights Out, the suspense stories. There was another show that, the comedies too. The sitcoms.
Okay. Can I ask you what comedies kind of caught your eye or caught your ear?
I liked Life with Luigi. It had Alan Reed in it. It had,
yeah,
of course, what's his name? The
J. Carroll Nash.
Thank you. J. Carroll Nash, who played in some horror films as well. Life with Luigi was a lot of fun. Listening to even the old Gunsmokes.
Life with Luigi is the only place you can hear Fred Flintstone with an Italian accent.
Yes.
I have heard some episodes. Unfortunately, there are not many of them. But the ones that are, you can't do them today, I guess. You can listen to them today, but I don't think you could do a show like that today. Because
with all the political correct nonsense, yeah.
Yeah. There was another show, I think it was called The Goldbergs, which again, because of the, it's not being politically correct and all that kind of stuff, you couldn't match today. That's one thing you just have to accept.
It's funny you brought up The Goldbergs, Sam, because on this, King Charles, excuse me. One of the young actors that played one of the sons in the Goldbergs was a guy named Hyman Brown, who went on to produce and direct many radio, including Inner Sanctum Mysteries, and later on in the 1970s and 80s, the CBS Radio Mystery Theater. He was an actor in the Goldbergs.
No kidding. I did not know that. Well, Dave is a... just a fountain of information on radio. I've known Dave for quite a while now, and we have talked extensively about old radio. And I wish that I had gotten to it sooner, but, in high school, Dave was writing, producing, directing his, his own radio shows. And, and I've read some of the things that he wrote. This is why, when you look at his latest efforts, The Weirdness Really Bad Movie, you see where his talent started and where his talent led to. So
and
I just
and obviously where my talent ends.
Well, I have. Dave, you're not done yet because I, as King Charles, I'm commanding you to continue the weirdness, really bad movie forever, because I cannot recommend any show more highly. Every single one that comes out, I am anticipation of it, and I'll tell
they're,
you what, I have
they're an absolute treat.
Yeah. They, the last one he did, which was the movie involved, was Santa Claus Conquers the Martians, and I mean, it's just fabulous, fabulous show. And they, the show, from its inception, what, 6 years ago now, Dave, or seven?
Seventh year. But this is a great place for you to plug in part two of our Lights Out episode.
Absolutely, guys. Let's hang in there for another segment of Lights Out Poltergeist.
You and I are rational people, and yet so many strange things are happening today, happening to people all around us. How about you? Are you worried about what's going on to your physical condition?
Yep.
Now, to return to Lights Out. Three girls had started on a happy holiday. Now one of them has been gravely injured. Now, girls, take it easy. Take it easy.
Oh, doctor, she won't die. Tell me she won't die.
No, no, of course not.
And you're sure that her skull isn't fractured?
Oh, absolutely not. Maybe a little concussion, that's all.
Well, it's almost 5. Our train. Can we get someone to help us carry her down to the station so we can get her on board?
Board? I'm telling you, that little friend of yours shouldn't be moved out of bed for a week. If you do, well, it might be just too bad.
Oh, Flo, what'll we do? You go home, Kay. I'll stay with her. Oh, no, you won't. I'm not leaving you here alone in this godforsaken place. If you stay, I stay too. Kay, please be sensible. Why should we all lose our jobs when you...
If you'll excuse me, you ladies, I've got to be on my way.
Oh, yes, of course, Doctor. Is there anything more you can do for Edna, Doctor? Any medicine or something?
Nope, I've done all I can do. She's sleeping comfortable now. Miss?
Yes, Doctor?
The constable's sick, too, you know, and he's sort of depending on me to keep things straight. Now, just how did you say that little friend of yours got hurt?
Well, it was just the way we explained, Doctor. That rock came flying and...
Yes, yes, I know, but who threw the rock?
We don't know.
What?
That's true, Doctor. We don't know.
But somebody threw it. You can't change facts. Somebody threw the rock that cracked her head.
For heaven's sakes, old man, you don't think we did it?
No,
okay,
miss, I didn't.
Excited. Doctor, you've got to believe us. It happened just the way we said. All at once, that rock came flying through the air from the direction of the graveyard. It struck Edna, and we just didn't see who threw it.
All right, if that's your story. Well, you better stay in your rooms here. I mean, you better not be leaving until the constable's on his feet and has a chance to talk with you. I'll be back in a few hours and see how the girl is.
He doesn't believe us. What difference does it make? We know what we saw. But what did we see? She was running. She fell. Hey, well, let's not fool ourselves. There was no one there to throw that rock.
There must have been.
But there wasn't.
Stop saying that!
Aren't you brave enough to face facts? There wasn't any place for anyone to hide. I saw that stone. It seemed to come down out of the air. So slowly.
Florence, if you don't stop talking like that...
Do you remember what Edna said? It throws things.
Stop looking at me like that. You're giving me the jitters.
She said the poltergeist throws things. Spirit of evil.
Florence, Rob, have you gone crazy too?
Why should we laugh at things like that? What right have we got to laugh? How do we know there aren't powers we can't see or understand? Powers of evil that revenge and insult just like an evil man. Kay, how do we know?
What are you talking like that for? What are you trying to scare me for? You're supposed to be the most intelligent one of us all. You with your college degrees. Sure, sure, I danced on the grave. But the dead are dead, and they can't revenge a thing. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid of anything. I tell you, what?
It's Edna.
Come on.
Edna, we're coming to you. Don't be afraid. We're coming.
Open the door, Florence. It's not locked.
Doug, it won't.
Here, let me. Edna, what is it? What?
Edna, what? On your head.
Hey, what's going on here?
Oh. The girl on the bed. Her head. It's crushed flat in by a rock. God in heaven. It's not a rock. It's a tombstone.
I wish I could cry, but I haven't got any more tears.
Oh, Edna. Edna.
Florence, darling, please. You'll kill yourself if you keep on like that. Oh, if this horrible night would only end.
It was my fault. Mine. I was the one who got her out here. She didn't want to go. She hates the country. But I made her come. I made her.
No. No, you're not the one to blame. I am. I danced on the grave.
But she was so good. So sweet. Oh, why does it have to be Edna? Why?
You're right. It wasn't right for it to be her, was it?
Oh, no.
I did it, not her. I did it. I danced on the grave. I danced.
Can't deny what you see with your own eyes. But I tell you, Doc, nobody could have carried that tombstone up the steps without me seeing him, could they?
But there it is, ain't it?
Yeah. There it is.
Either somebody's playing a terrible joke or...
You don't have to say it, Doc. I know.
That's just the trouble. You don't know, and I don't know, and nobody knows.
Yeah. And that tombstone.
Well, what about the tombstone?
I ain't quite sure, but that's a tombstone out of the old burying grounds up at the bend.
You're crazy.
No, I ain't either.
Well, that place is a good 3 miles from here.
Yeah, I know.
Who could have carted a heavy stone like that for 3 miles?
Yeah, who?
Stop looking like that, you flap-eared old fool. Human hands carried that stone in here and killed that girl?
Sure.
Yeah, the constable will find out who did it the minute he's on his feet again. You wait and see.
No, he won't, Doc. You're smarter than me and all that, but this time you're wrong. There ain't nobody that takes in breath and leaves out breath like you and me, or the constable's going to find out who killed that girl. You know that, Doc.
No, stop talking. I wish the constable was here and this night was over. It's been a terrible night. Terrible.
Yeah, I know. I've been sitting here listening to it.
I can't stand it anymore. I'll stop it.
Why bother with it?
Come on to bed, Kay. Please. There's no use sitting there. It won't help her.
Yeah. Nothing can help her. But maybe I can help you.
Me?
It was my fault. Mine. I was the reason it happened. It killed her, and it'll kill you and me, too, unless I stop.
No, don't say that.
It's true. But why should you be hurt? I'm to blame, not you. Listen, Flo. I'll go out there.
There?
Out there to the graveyard.
What?
I'll talk to her.
Kay.
I'll tell her I didn't mean to do it.
No.
But I didn't know where I was dancing.
Please.
Maybe somehow it'll hear. Listen to me. And then it won't hurt
oh,
you.
No, no, I won't let you go out there. It'll kill
but
you.
Florence.
It'll kill you, too.
But Florence.
No, I'll hold you. You can't go. You can't.
All right.
Come on to bed, Kay, please. In the morning things will be different.
But it won't.
Nothing will hurt us. And then they're right outside the door. They won't let anything get at us. Oh, please, Kay, please, come to bed.
Yeah.
We'll pray.
Pray? I don't exactly know how.
Just say anything. Anything. Like this. Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. Now you.
If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take.
That was part two of Lights Out. The episode known as Poltergeist.
Yes. Oh, wow. Absolutely love this episode.
Yeah.
It's just creepy. This one and the one called The Spider probably are the two that I can recall creepiest ones that I remember hearing. These are from, there were several incarnations, started on NBC, and Arch Oberlin left it in 39. I think it ended in 40 without him. Then he kept bringing it back every now and then when he needed more money for other projects he was working on. Most of these, almost all the recordings left from Lights Out are from the 1942 and 43 year that he did on CBS. That's what you're hearing here. It was a sponsored
yeah, this
by
one's from October 20th of 1942.
Yeah, and these are the ones that the remaining, the ones that survived. I think all the original ones that Willis Cooper did, I think there may be one surviving recording, is what I think I read, of the original Lights Out program. But they didn't have any of those. What's interesting is, when it went back to NBC later on for an 8-episode summer run, NBC got back and retained, and to this day retains the rights to the Lights Out name, but Arch Oboler retained until his death the rights to the scripts and the original radio recordings. And that's what he was even doing in the 70s. He was re-releasing these stories, these recordings, as the Devil and Mr. O, because he couldn't use the name Lights Out because NBC owns the rights to the name. But even at that point, if you recall, Arch Oboler wasn't done with radio. Back during the days of the CBS Radio Mystery Theater, Elliot Lewis, who, if you ever heard the Elliot Lewis was all over Suspense, and he was on one of the other shows where he starred in it. But he was also Frankie Remley in the Phil Harris Al Space Show.
Oh yes, I remember those.
In the 1970s, he had a couple of series that he revived into radio. One was one that Rod Serling hosted, The Zero Hour. And Elliot Lewis brought that back, and they were 5 days a week, and it told one story. They were like novelettes that were told in 5 half-hour parts. The second year, they were all stories that were independent. They were all half-hour independent. The first year, they were five-part stories. And his second series later on was with when CBS Radio Mystery Theater was on, was the Sears Radio Theater, which would half a year later become the Mutual Radio Theater. And Arch Oboler, Wednesday nights was their horror mystery type night. And Arch Oboler himself also penned several scripts for that, as well as even acted in one himself called The Lion Hunt. And in The Lion Hunt, he had gone on safaris into Africa, but he didn't shoot anything. He went and he got all these recordings, and he used these recordings as background for the story for Lion Hunt. So even into the early 1980s, before he passed, Arch Oboler still was active into the world of radio.
Now, Dave, when we were talking just before we started the show, You brought up something that I thought was a really good point that we should share with our audience. And that was how writers like Arch Obler and Willis Cooper wrote stories that had dark endings. And this was like the first time that American culture was really inundated, in mass media at least, with stories that had dark endings.
Yeah, and this was interesting because when Arch Obler was kind of given the reins at NBC in Chicago for the Lights Out program, at first he wasn't real thrilled. He wrote that in one of his biographies because here he is on a show that was on at midnight. Most people weren't going to hear, but then he realized, and didn't have a sponsor. But then he realized because he didn't have a sponsor and because it wasn't the norm, that basically he could do a lot of experimenting like Willis Cooper did. And he always, whenever anybody talks about Lights Out, Archibald was very quick to jump on there. Hey, look, this was Willis Cooper's. He's the one that created it. I just continued on with what he was doing and his creativity. But the very first episode he penned for it, people were complaining because at the end of that episode, now this was like in 1937.
36, it's the June of 36, according to Wikipedia, and
okay.
I think you're talking about burial service.
The burial service, right. That was, a young woman was buried alive, and they weren't going to dig her out in time. So this was something unheard of back then, especially in the 1930s. You're in the midst of the Great Depression, and... Wow.
I guess people were depressed enough.
Yeah. So it was...
It's funny how both horror films and horror radio were very prolific prior to World War II, when it was a very dark era.
History. You know what's funny? In Britain, when they did horror movies, they actually couldn't do horror movies during the war. Things were so bad in England. But actually, they had to throw in some comedy or things like that, which is when you look at The Ghost Train, which was done during World War II. It was basically a comedy/horror film because there was enough comedy in there that way, because they weren't technically allowed to make horror films during the war because the war was horrible enough, I guess.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, England was, you know, right in the way of the Blitzkrieg and the things that were going on at the time. But this is a lot of fun. And here at Erie House, we're gonna do this on a weekly basis. So starting on Friday at 7:30 Eastern, Friday the 13th, we will have an episode of classic radio here on old time radio with Erie House, and that'll be this Friday, so don't miss that.
Before we get back to the conclusion of the story, I think it was interesting, Sam talked about the Lights Out television show also on NBC. It had four kind of a pilot episode type thing in 1947, well received, didn't become serious until 49 though, ran for 3 years. And you've seen a lot of those, Dale. It was tremendous with Boris Karloff and many actors of the day or up-and-comers that were getting their shot. Kind of like what Twilight Zone did for the career of so many of the people there, like Robert Redford was in and Jack Klugman was in and so many of these.
Yeah, they cut their teeth on these types of shows, these anthology shows, and got their opportunity to show their range as actors. And some of these shows, like Twilight Zone, Outer Limits, they were wonderful vehicles for these actors to tell these stories and show their work.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite episodes of the TV show, and actually both Arch Obler and Willis Cooper were asked to and did. Write some episodes for the TV series. But one of my favorite one, and I'm not sure who wrote this one, but it was Dead Man's Coat with Basil Rathbone.
Yes.
That is a tremendous episode.
I like him as an actor as well. Basil Rathbone's one of my favorites. He, not just
really,
as Sherlock Holmes, but his other roles.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but he did the radio versions. He and Nigel Bruce did radio versions, a lot of them, I think.
Mm-hmm.
More than 100, radio shows. And I have to say, and this is just my opinion, that they were very high quality. They were, obviously there were limitations to what you could do with it. But that was another series that I can't tell you right now how many episodes are available. When I started, getting more and more interested in old-time radio, that was one of the ones I found. And I listened to every single episode of that just because they were so good together. And just as an aside, Dave remembers, and I'm sure Dale remembers too, that there was criticism of the that Nigel Bruce Basil Rathbone team, because they thought that Nigel Bruce was not appropriate, because in the original stories Dr. Watson was not the kind of bumbling kind of guy that Nigel Bruce with his comedic skills brought to that venue. And I thought that was unfair, because they were trying to entertain people, and I think they did so. The Sherlock Holmes movies, I don't think they're perfect. They are extremely entertaining. Your thoughts on that?
They're a lot of fun. I've always enjoyed them in the movies. I did get to hear a few episodes, in the car, listening to satellite radio, and I would agree it's an unfair assessment. I absolutely only think of Dr. Watson as Nigel Bruce. I can only picture him. I love the comedic bumbler.
Yeah. Here's a question for you. Here's a question for both of you. Which one was older, Nigel Bruce or Basil Rathbone?
I'm going to guess Nigel Bruce, but from your question, I'm guessing I'm wrong.
Dale?
Neither. Well, they were born on the same day.
I don't know.
Oh, a trick question.
No. Actually, Basil Rathbone was half a year older than Nigel Bruce.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
So, just for a little bit of a trivia there. I really love their movies, and I accept him in that role of Watson, but I don't like it when other Sherlock Holmes use the Nigel Bruce portrayal of Watson, because I'm not critical of Nigel Bruce doing that, because that's the way they wrote him. They turned him outside of the Hound of the Baskervilles, where he wasn't just a complete blithering idiot, which he was in most of the movies. But Watson was a doctor. He was a trained doctor. He wasn't an old blithering idiot. And so I prefer it when Watsons are a little bit more intelligent. I do like the stories like that. Not taking anything away from Bruce and Rathbone, because I really do love their movies. But outside of them, I don't like a Watson being a doddering old fool. But I accept it with these two.
Because Dave was absolutely right.
With that being said, gentlemen, we got to run off and finish off.
Okay,
get back into the mood.
Well, thank you both. It's been a pleasure.
Yep. Let's wrap up Lights Out Poltergeist. Get those lights back off and get ready to finish off part 3 of Lights Out Poltergeist.
Kay, are you asleep? I can't sleep anymore. Kay, tomorrow, when it gets light and everything, do you think people will believe us? Do you think so, Kay? I'm not quite sure what happened. I always used to be so sure about things. And now I... Kay? Kay, where are you? Kay, where... The window. She went out the window. She's gone out there.
to the graveyard. To talk to it. Okay, why did you go? Why did you go?
I'll go out there, too. Oh, she'll be so frightened out there alone. I'll go, too. I'll go, too. Oh, so cold. Hands. Nose so sharp. Cutting my legs. Oh, why did you go out there, Kay? Why did you? I've got to find you. The wind. Oh, why doesn't the wind stop? Blow, blow, thou winter wind. Thou art not so unkind. Oh, I've got to find you, Kay. I've got to find you. It's snowing. I love snow. Edna didn't like snow. Where are you, Kay? Where are you? I lost my way. I lost the road. Where are you, Kay? Kay, where are... I heard you. I'm coming to you, Kay. We'll talk to it. We'll talk to it together. We'll say that we didn't mean any harm, won't we, Kay? Won't we? Poor Edna. We can't help her, Kay. We can't help Edna. But I'm coming to help you, Kay. I'm coming. I'm coming. Yes, I hear you. I hear you. I'm coming, darling. I'm coming to help. I'm coming to help you. I'm coming. I'm coming. I hear you. I hear you calling my name. I hear you. Yes. Yes, I hear you. I hear you. Where are you? Where are you? No! No!
This way, Hooper. They must have come this way.
Climbing out the window like that in the middle of the night. They must have gone crazy, the both of them.
Well, let's not worry about that now. We've got to find them. Here, give me that lantern.
What is it, Doc? What have you found?
A shoe. One of the girl's shoes.
My gosh, stuck in the snow. We're going the right way.
Come on, move fast. We've got to get to them.
Doc! Look at this.
What is it?
Over there. Ain't these footprints?
Yes. Yes. Yes, that's right. Footprints. Hello, up ahead. Hello.
Doc, we're getting pretty close to the old burying grounds.
Well?
Maybe. Oh, look here, Doc. Let's not be fools. Let's wait till morning.
What? Let those frightened girls freeze to death? Get along.
But, Doc,
You come with me, or the whole town will know what a yellow-livered no-good you are.
All right. All right. You don't have to get so sore, Doc.
Hello! Hello! Anybody up there? Hello!
Doc! Doc, look!
What?
There they are. Up ahead.
Glory be, they're alive. The both of them. Come on.
Doc. Doc, look at them. That's the burying ground up there. And they're dancing. Dancing on the graves.
But they must be out of their heads. Come on, we've got to stop them.
Doc! Doc, wait for me. Oh, Doc, it's Doc again. Where are they, Doc? Where are the girls? Have they stopped dancing?
Yes.
Huh?
They've stopped dancing. Did they ever dance?
What are you talking about, Doc? We saw them. We saw them dancing in this place with our own eyes.
Did we? The moonlight. Here it comes again. See with your eyes again.
Oh, no.
Both of of the girls froze stiff to the ground, each with her head crushed by a tombstone.
Strobler, would you mind telling us, me, whether there actually are such things as poltergeists?
All I can tell you is this. There are authenticated records in existence that, in the city of London on the 27th day of April, 1872, from 4 in the afternoon on a Thursday until 11:30 at night, a certain room in a certain house was deluged by stones thrown from no apparent source. The London police surrounded the house, but they found no trace of whoever or whatever was throwing those stones with a murderous violence.
I see. So much for poltergeist. But what about next week?
That's something I'll tell you about in a moment.
Good. Meantime, friends, here... Fair enough. Then if you need more vitamin B and iron, ask your druggist for the genuine, the one and only ironized yeast tablets. And now, Mr. Obler, what happens next week?
Well, anything can happen, but specifically next week, Mangara, a strange title and a strange story. The power of suggestion. The dictators have shown us to what evil purposes that power can be used. Well, next week, a man who... but that, as usual, is next week.
Yes. Lights Out, written and directed by Arch Obler, will come to you again next Tuesday at the same time. Be sure to listen for the amazing story of Mangara. And if you need more vitamin B and iron, be sure to try ironized yeast, the one and only ironized yeast, with the big letters IY on the package and on each tablet. It is later than you think.
Ironized Yeast presents Lights Out, everybody.
That was the on helium version, I think. By the power of advertising, I have a taste now for ionized yeast. I don't know why.
Yeah,
I just
have to go ask my pharmacist for some.
I remember they used to sell it near the cheese in the grocery stores. It was like the cheese and the butter. It was just like a flat packet. It was a flat packet. It was red with the white letters IY on it.
Oh, my goodness. I don't remember.
It was like a cooking supplement of some kind. I don't know.
Wouldn't the yeast kind of make you blow up?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not a cook, but I know that isn't yeast used to make bread rise? So if you're taking these tablets, doesn't that, balloon up your stomach or something?
It could be. Hey, King, we are just about out of time. We've got a little bit more than a minute left here on Erie House Radio. However, that kills the live portion of our show. There's an extra bit of time afterwards that's recorded for people who come in to listen later on in the archives. If you want to stick around,
sure.
We can chat a bit. We can chat a bit further about.
I wanted to share that we can put in the after party there.
Okay. Cool.
I had some more questions for you because you and Dave obviously know more than I do, and it was a fascinating show, and a lot of the points you brought up I would like to know a little bit more about. So if you don't mind, I'll stay on the phone.
Yeah, Dave's a book of knowledge about this stuff, and it's extra exciting for me to not only listen to these shows, the ones I've heard before and the shows I have not yet been exposed to, and then learn more about them through Dave's experiences. And thanks for sharing with us.
I'm looking forward to your show. Friday's at,
and for the regular listeners, we'll see you Friday at 7:30 Eastern. Thanks for listening to Erie House Radio. Bye-bye. Yay. We are in the recorded version afterwards now.
The three parts worked out nice, Jack, or Dale. The three parts, breaking into three, that was perfect.
What did you call me?
I
That's not that funny. No. Boy, talk about horror.
Just wash out with Irish thing and I can't do a thing with it.
Yeah, that's okay. I have not yet picked an episode for Friday's show, but I'll be slobbering all over Facebook about that when I pick one, and we'll do that Friday at 7:30. That sounds like a hoot. I'd like to do like a Hermit's Cave or something like that. Get one of the early shows that I have to start things off. And there's
one thing we didn't get to talk about was Arch Obler's movies.
Yeah, and, I'm a huge fan of Five.
Uh huh. Yes. And also when I looked up, I guess I had to check it out, and it wasn't quite true. But one source, I think it was on IMDb, said how he wrote the first 3D. He produced the first 3D movie, which was not quite true. It was the first sound American 3D movie.
And that was the
movie Bawana Devil from 1952.
Oh, really?
That was the first sound 3D movie for American theaters. Actually, the first two were silenced in the U.S. It would have been, I'm looking for it here, Power of Love in 1922, and there was one other one as well. I lost that. Mars, also known as Radiomania, also from 1922, both silence. The first sound ones, Russia had one in 1947, a production of Robinson Crusoe, and then it was Arch Obler in 1952 with his movie. So he produced the first American sound 3D movie.
No kidding.
Dave, can you tell me? I'm sorry. Dave, can you tell me what other, how many films he produced and what some of them were?
Only a handful of films, and Five was his best known one, obviously as what Dale said there. Bewitched in 1945, Five in 1951, Strange Holiday in 1945. That may be pretty much it for Arch Obler as far as the movies go. He did also things for television and a ton of different radio shows as well. But those are the only, that's what I was looking at.
Well, that's interesting. I didn't know that he had actually produced these. You talked earlier about his associations with NBC and so on and so forth. I had no idea that he was a producer.
Well, the radio shows, he was the director, writer, producer. He was basically the guy that, a producer, from talking to Dan O'Shannon, is essentially, he's a glorified writer who has other responsibilities. And so Arch Obler took on a lot of those responsibilities himself. And certainly for his own movies, like the movies that Orson Welles produced himself, and directed.
Oh, wow. Here's a film that Arch Obler wrote, directed, and produced that is, I'm another fan of it. It's a very obscure film. You don't hear about it too often, but it's with Hans Conried called The Twonky.
Yeah.
That was a famous science fiction story.
Yep.
Yes. About the television that comes
no
to
idea.
Light. Yeah. He did another film called The Bubble in 1966. That's the last film credit they give him. Again, writer, director, producer.
When was the Twonky released, does it say?
53.
53?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Real passions is science fiction of the 50s,
and just, you know, for whatever. I have about 1,000 old paperbacks from the 1950s. And I remember that story, you know, for the title, you know, just because it was so odd. But, mm-hmm. I mean, it really stirred my interest. And it's interesting to see where some of these, you know, to where some of these stories went. I mean, there was a lot of them, of these, you know, originally just, you know, published in Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine. And, you know, at least a dozen others that that went on to become movies.
Yeah. You must be also a fan of the pulps, then, I would imagine.
Of the which?
The pulps, pulp magazines?
Pulp. Oh, yeah, yeah. As a matter of fact, on Internet Archive, there are, I mean, a ton of...
Yes.
And I owe Dave... I'm sorry, Dave, I haven't done that yet. I think somewhere on the archive there are 355 references to just one of these magazines called the Magazine of Galaxy, or it was called Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and some of these old stories, I mean, they resonate today because if you look at post-war, well, if you look pre-World War II, a lot of the science fiction, as you both well know, was more adventure stories, more the Buck Rogers type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And but post-World War II, there was a lot more critical, satirical, and humorous looks at where is, you know, where are we going as a planet? You know,
and, yeah, and that's the fun thing about the 1950s science fiction, because there's so much of that was the end of the world stories, you know, which happened on the film as well as in the pulp stories, as well as X-1 and Dimension X. All those were, you know, end of the world stories.
There were
okay. I think it's obvious though after the usage of the atomic bomb. That became fodder for a lot of these films, and these were the things we had to worry about. We actually had the means to destroy the planet. We were creating the means to get to other planets. That technology was just being started at that time, and it was becoming closer and closer to reality.
And another theme that was very, very common was American. Or actually world American sometimes, but in a lot of other instances, where the planet suffers from overpopulation and they want to go out and colonize other planets, other, you know, solar systems and things like that. And the, you know, the problems like that, you know, how do you, you know, what do? You send these people out, okay, here's your planet, here you go, and we'll check in on you in, 10 years, 100 years, and see how you're doing. But at the time, American colonialism was, I mean, historically on the rise. We were doing what the British did many years before that, and other countries too, obviously the Dutch, Germans, the French, and so on and so forth. But colonialism, as it, you know, related to the discovery of, you know, new planets, was a very common theme. And I found that very interesting. Like I said, along with the a lot of stories that were fairly satirical of our government, and that was not done pretty much pre-World War II. Post-World War II, it became much more prevalent, and people would, you know, many times in a humorous way. Well, they didn't want Joe McCarthy on their necks, I guess. I
yeah, that's for sure.
But that was something that
also portrayed a look at ourselves, look, almost like Rod Serling said. He could say two things with Martians that he couldn't say as humans. And if you ever listen to the old X-1 story of the Martian Death March. That's what we did to the Indians. And that's telling the story and how we marched the Martians basically to their doom, as we did the Trail of Tears, sending the Indians to the Florida Everglades.
You wonder if they were influenced by writers like Jonathan Swift, who cleverly could spoof or satirize, you know, the ruling powers by writing fantasy stories and creative stories and using their imagination to make those associations.
I would imagine so. I would imagine so, yeah.
There was one particular story, as a matter of fact, where the Martians Martians came to Earth, and they happened to be for the population, because of the way they looked, as objects of ridicule. And the people would look at them and go, isn't that just like a Martian, you know, to do that or to, you know, do this or that. And it goes on and on and on. And the Martian is ensconced in a hotel, I believe in New York. I would not swear to that. But there is a point at the end where a particular minority who was a, a bell captain or whatever they call them in hotels, the people that take your luggage out to the car. And, you know, the guy, one of the people that he's talking to say, well, you know, it doesn't, you know, these Martians, you know, it doesn't really matter. But because of, you know, the ridicule that these Martians had been taking, the very end of the story ends with this black man who is a bell captain saying, it makes a lot of difference to me. And that was something that at that time was kind of not done. I thought that was a very bold statement.
Yeah,
you know, at that
time. Think he made a similar point in Five with the African-American actor who was at odds with the Frenchman, who adventurer, over race. That Frenchman just didn't like the black guy. And nobody else cared, but the you know, that guy wanted to be a leader, and there was difficulty with him, and that was interesting, a very early film, to my mind, that broached the topic as well.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a lot of things where government was kind of spoofed. The military was spoofed. There's a lot of stories where the government does not come off as being particularly competent or, you know, and so on and so forth. And these are the stories that, personally, I find most fascinating because, I mean, obviously at the time, I mean, you didn't go in and make fun of Dwight D. Eisenhower. You know, I mean,
no.
In real life. That,
no, you
yeah,
didn't.
I mean, that
down.
Wouldn't happen. But, you know, there were, and because, you know, they're obviously set in the future or something like that, I guess that's how they could get away with it. Is that what you think?
Yes, absolutely. Again, I parallel it to the writings of Jonathan Swift when he wrote Gulliver's Travels.
Yeah.
You know, using the Lilliputians, and then I forget the name of the other characters that were giant-sized, to explain how, you know, someone who's a king or a big person in one country can be nothing in another. And that would have been frowned upon if it had been, you know, addressed openly rather than in a
right.
in a fantasy story.
Right, like
right.
a newspaper columnist, you know, obviously probably would take a lot of heat for something like that. But someone that, you know, is just writing a story, I think it still resonates with reader, but in a different way.
Yeah, absolutely. You just brought to mind with this whole topic, speaking of government incompetence in a science fiction film, was the Tim Burton version of the Mars Attacks trading cards.
Oh, yeah. yeah.
With Jack Nicholson as the president and the general that was kind of like a crazed Patton type.
It was Rod Steiger, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yes, it was. There were so many cameos in that movie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, that's an excellent point. I'd forgotten about that. But that was another, you know, film that that I really liked. And I thought brought up, you know, hey, you know, we can make fun of ourselves. Okay. And if you can't make fun of yourself, then, well, I don't know. You know.
Yeah.
Well, and at the same time, they not only make fun of themselves, but they also make a point. They have a point to make,
yes,
as well.
Yeah,
and that's what a lot of the science fiction in the 50s was about presenting a point of view, getting a story out that if you looked hard enough in the newspapers, you could probably find a news story that triggered that.
Oh, I know another great example is the original Day the Earth Stood Still.
Yes.
First in the just the very approach with Klaatu, just assuming he was coming to attack, and they tried taking him down, if you recall, at the beginning. That was one point that they made. And another reference that was made by Aunt B in the meal scene with Michael Rennie, and she said the topic at the table was about the missing spaceman. They didn't realize he was having a meal with them. she made a remark, you know, obviously directed at the Cold War. She goes, oh, we know where they really come from. And by the context of the conversation, you knew she meant, you know, the USSR at the time.
Right. Yeah.
So I think science fiction's always been a great vehicle for a little bit of social commentary along with exploring the wonderment of science fiction.
Yes. Well, one of the X-Men ones I'm thinking about is really great is the Trojan Horse. It's about how the British thought that they gave away World War II to the Germans by trying to plant this false science fiction super weapon. Eventually it did. They found it in the science fiction magazine. The guy was a writer who was actually stationed in, he was cleaning toilets in the UK for the US military. They helped develop this thing. They stuck it out of the country, ended up blowing up the top of a mountain, which they couldn't admit to because actually the first parts of the test that worked, they thought they had given away the war to Germany. So that's a really fun episode of
which was
of
this
the,
again?
That's the X minus one. It's called the Trojan Horse.
The Trojan Horse, X minus one. I'm sorry, I'm trying to write these down because I'm interested in following. Yeah, I'm trying to. I want to follow up on these because
King Charles is going to go back and listen now.
That's right. It'll be in the archive there.
Yeah, that's my favorite spot.
You may hear it here sooner than you think.
Oh, okay. That would be great.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it doesn't mean anything, but I have something like 45,000 old radio shows.
God.
And, yeah, no, I have not listened to every one of them. For example, Johnny Dollar, the Old Time Radio Researchers Group, released the entire set, which is, I mean, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of episodes.
Yeah.
And I listened to about, you know, maybe 30 or 40 of them.
Wasn't that like a daily show? Like they do 15-minute.
Started out as a half hour with Edmund O'Brien and one or two other guys. Then it went away for a year. Then in 1954, came back as a Monday through Friday 15-minute episodic story. And I think one
they
of
were
them was like
cool.
One of them was 12 parts long. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Kind of almost like the I Love a Mystery. Which had a very, very, very young Tony Randall in it.
Oh, wow. Yeah, but they were very much a serial. And I enjoyed Johnny Dollar. I liked his style and his character. It was good. Good show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like I said, I mean, I have the entire set because the OTRR, as it's called, released the entire set. But at the time, there were so many other shows that I became somewhat obsessed with it when I found out, oh my God, there's something like over 200 episodes of You Bet Your Life radio show.
Oh, geez.
And,
Now, did Groucho do that show too?
I'm sorry?
Yeah, it was from radio before he took it to television. As a matter of fact, when it first came to television, it was just a simulcast of the radio before they, I think, split it into two different shows.
Oh, no kidding.
But there were, I mean, the archive has so many of these shows.
Yeah, I know.
The Phil Harris, as Dave referenced before, Frank Remley, Phil Harris and Alice Faye was another one where there's, I think, a couple of hundred episodes. And,
yeah, I like them on Jack Benny, too, because Jack would reference
them
all
the time. That's where he started. Yeah.
Yeah.
But when he got his own show, I mean, the shows got even a little weirder than...
what I'm thinking about is when Phil dropped, or Frankie dropped, Alice's wedding ring down the drain, and they ended up flooding the kitchen. They were swimming around trying to get down and get the ring and stuff like that.
Now, I believe... Didn't he have Phil Harris's foil was a wonderful voice actor who did a lot of the child cartoon voices, and it was a little boy that constantly drove Phil Harris crazy on the show.
Walter.
Oh,
Walter
that's
Tetley.
Right.
Walter Tetley was that name.
That's right. Yeah.
I think so, yeah. And it was just such an iconic voice that I remember from so many cartoons from the 60s.
Yeah, and I think he was also Leroy on The Great Gildersleeve.
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
And the same kind of an annoying kid.
Oh, absolutely.
That was another great show, and one that I really enjoyed. Actually, it's interesting, too. If you look back, there are now this is not radio. I'm sorry to get off topic, perhaps, but Jackie Gleason, I'm trying to think. William Bendix took over the role, but Jackie Gleason had the first was the first person who was. And Dave can help me out here. What was that show?
Well, Life of Riley, but William Bendix was pretty on radio, but I think he was contractually obligated that when they wanted to bring it to television. He wasn't allowed to go do that yet. So for the first so many episodes, Jackie Gleason stepped in.
Yeah.
And that was the skinny Jackie Gleason.
Yeah, that was before the Honeymooners, yeah.
Yeah. He was actually kind of not skinny, but, I mean, he was not anywhere near, the size that he was, later in his career. And, it just points up, I guess sometimes the vagaries of, okay, this person can't do it because they're under contract, and they're making a movie, and for the next year they're just not available. Or, like you say, when TV came along, there were a lot of studios that said, look, you are contracted to us, you do not do television, because they saw that. They saw television correctly as, taking away their business.
Yeah, and eventually, unfortunately, it did. But we still have venues like this, so we can keep the old radio shows live and not only share it with folks who remember them, but hopefully expose people who haven't heard these wonderful shows. To take a little interest. You might be surprised. This was a very, very good episode tonight. It was rather chilling.
It was. Tremendous story. Actually, I forgot the very last part where they were dancing in the cemetery. I'd forgotten that.
Yeah. Or were they? Or were they?
Or were they, yes.
Well, you know what? I think that, a show like that is fairly timeless. I think it would, I don't think it depends on the fact that, okay, it was made so long ago. It's still a good story. And to me, that's, To me, that's the important part.
That's the art of the storytelling.
Did you notice, gentlemen, what I found particularly interesting, that it was still as good of a story, and it's still, there was no music, none.
Right. It was all done by the acting and the scripting. I thought about that. You're right. I thought about that when it was going on and forgot to bring that up. But when you can go on that much on the acting and the scripting, that's amazing. You don't need any of that music. Unfortunately, when I did the radio dramas, I depended very much upon my mood music.
Well, it was interesting, too, because, I mean, if you listen to the show, there's not really a whole lot of sound effects in it. And I'm asking you, was that a product of the times? They just did not have that, or
I don't think they really did it. The most hair-raising one, when that Chinese gong gets hit, man, don't the hairs go up on the back of your neck?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I do recall there are some shows that had more complex sound effects to them, so it may have been deliberate to make it lonely and desolate, and the only thing you really heard that was a constant sound effect was the wind outside in the cold.
Yeah.
The rest
and what
was voices.
Like Dave said, I mean, it depends on the actors and the script. If you have actors in the script, to me, that's the most important thing, the special effects, because, and this is just because I'm old, there are so many shows and movies that I think that they depend so much on, I guess, what they call CGI now.
Yeah.
That, you know, once you get past the, you know, oh my goodness, and like, how do they do that? There's not that much story behind it.
No,
they're depending on that to sell the product, which I guess unfortunately these days, that's what people expect. They expect to, you know, the oh wow effect, you know, instead of like, you know, does this say anything to you? Does this movie really?
We've talked about that countless times, really, on the show, and I really don't mind mentioning it again, that modern films just aren't as well written, and the characters are not as human as they used to be.
Yeah.
To me, at least, I can't relate to the characters, and more as a rule, not that there aren't exceptions, but by and large, you know, even some of the low budget films, you know, had some really good actors and some really good stories.
Yeah. You know, I thought interesting too about the Lights Out is upon occasion, Arch would write himself into some of the stories, like in the studio and coffin, the coffin in Studio B, and like the very last episode that he did, where basically he was dictating the story for next week, you know, that kind of a thing. It was nice to see him as a writer be in the stories once in a while.
Ah, a very Hitchcock move. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us here on Erie House Radio. We're going to wrap it up here. Hope you can join. I know you will, Dave. But I hope, King, can I call you King?
my kingdom is 1,121 square feet on the second floor of a 29-story building. So
wow.
It's not as impressive as it sounds. But I've declared it my kingdom, so, and that's the way it's going to be.
And David, congratulations on 7 years of weirdness, really bad movie. You've been around as long as Walking Dead.
And that's how I feel sometimes.
Yeah. Well, you must be tireless because
like
you're...
Yeah, if I could, real quick, I'd like to thank Dave for turning me on to your show. And
thank you.
Fridays at 7:30, those are locked in now, okay? Because I really enjoy your show.
Terrific. tell you. Now, let's see that. My listenership just doubled. No.
It just doubled. Yeah, there you go.
Tell your friends. No, thank you. You're welcome to join us each time. And obviously, this being Eerie House, it's going to be horror, sci-fi, and fantasy themed for the most part. I mean, it can be argued that a good murder mystery fits the horror genre, so you'll be hearing stuff like that, too, here on Eerie House on Fridays at 7:30. Gentlemen, thanks again, and thank you for folks listening in the archive. And we'll see you next time on Eerie House Radio. Bye-bye.
Thank you both.